For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly Bank Holiday Special today. Not much really, just the Championship finale, sunshine at the KC, trannies at the Vicarage on the last day of drama abroad. Titles for Ajax and Juve and why Lazio kept their closer on. Mou versus Pepe, Bayern against Borussia, and yes, the Premier League. Top four race, bottom three battle, yet more Latic dramatics. There's posts, tweets, and farewell to Rob Smythe. The gloves are off in this Football Weekly. Boy, is this pod going to be special. So many reasons to say that. First of all, the fact that we're in a funny little room, all huddled around a cluster of microphones, and we've got extra people in. There's Simon Burnton, fresh from his Hornet misery at the weekend.
Yep.
And sharing a microphone with Rob Smythe.
Hello.
Rob Smythe. Valedictorian appearance today, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
special day, special day. And, James Horncastle.
Hello.
Leeds fan, James Horncastle.
Yes.
And Jacob Steinberg.
Watford fan, apparently.
Anyway, listeners, it's all very mixed up here, and it looks a little bit like, the great days of Band-Aid with Rob and Simon there sharing headphones. And we've all checked our egos at the door as well, so it makes for something pretty special. And we've certainly got plenty to talk about, plenty of great games, virtually none of which were played on Sunday in the Premier League because they were a bit drab, weren't they? So there was a Man United-Chelsea. Good goal from Mata.
Sensational. But on first view, it looked like he'd very delicately placed it. And then you saw it hit one of Phil Jones's huge thighs.
It's the kind of thing he does in training with Spain, isn't it? Just bend it off the inside of someone's thighs into the net.
Saying he meant to do that.
Yeah, of course. What about Rafael and Luis then?
Yeah, it was a strange game. That goal kind of summed up the game because it trickled in and it was very slow. There was no pace to it. United couldn't be bothered. And Chelsea, for a lot of the time, there wasn't a lot of urgency, which was surprising given that they were the team that needed to win to get the top four. And then right at the end, last 5 minutes, nothing had happened. Mata scores and United suddenly wake up and Rafael and Luis have a... Well, Luis does what he does, which is he elbows people in the chest sometimes, winds him up. Rafael lashes out, and then Luis has a little chuckle about it afterwards.
Well, does he have a chuckle? I don't know. Because when, for example, he was getting booked by the referee, he had the same kind of grimace stroke smile on his face. And that's pretty much his default expression. Also, Rupert Kane saying, please note Luis wasn't smiling at cameras, but at Man United fans a few feet away who were swearing at him.
Yeah, well, smile in the face adversity, I guess. Yeah. But I don't know, it was... It was kind of reminiscent of Busquets going down in the Champions League semi-final and Thiago Motta getting sent off.
Busquets at least had the grace to cover his smile.
Apart from doing the little peeky boo.
Yeah, he peeked through his hands, but they were very similar situations. But one at least tried to hide the lack of pain on his face behind his hands, and the other just showed it off to the fans.
Terrific entertainment. Anyway, that and the goal aside, largely a forgettable affair. John Lay saying chant at the weekend from Chelsea fans at Old Trafford will race you back to London, which is nice. And a lot of people tweeting about possible Man United deliberate underperforming to ensure that Tottenham don't get into the top four so that they can sell them Bale cheaper, which are all valid points, I suppose. But forgettable though the game was, the result very important for Chelsea, who are on 68 points, one above Arsenal, Spurs on 65, 2 points outside the top four, and of course that massive game against Spurs coming up on Wednesday. They're looking a bit leggy though, are they, Chelsea, do you think?
They were tired, I think, a little bit after playing the semi-final against Basel 3 days earlier. They also were missing Hazard, who's been such an important player for them in recent weeks, and he was injured. He picked up a little knock against Basel, and I think they didn't want to risk him with the Spurs game coming up. But they did control the game. They were the better side and had the better chances. They deserved to win just about.
The last time Spurs won at Chelsea, Nelson Mandela was in prison.
Wow.
It was the day before he came out.
Really? Yeah. Day before he came out?
It was the same weekend that Tyson lost to Buster Douglas.
Wow, cool. What was number one that day? Simon, you've got an app for this.
I do, I've got an app for that. I'm looking up now. And yeah, Sinead O'Connor was in the middle of a 4-week stretch at the top.
With Nothing Compares,
nothing compares to you. That's right.
Wow, nascent tech speak from Sinead there. Cool. What else happened that day? Does it say on your app, or is it just the number one?
Just the number one hits.
I was hoping you were saying a little bit more cheesy.
I am looking for what followed her.
All right, good. But it was something like Baggy.
It was Dub Be Good To Me by Beats International.
This is a golden age of pop.
Lindy Layton.
Two good number ones in a row.
I hated Dub Be Good To Me.
Really?
Yeah.
Should we have an arm wrestle about it?
No, Rob, you'll beat me. Are we going any further in our search for 90s cheese?
I can look at what preceded Sinead O'Connor.
It must have been Martika.
That was Tears On My Pillow by Kylie Minogue. And before that, Hangin' Tough from the Kids On The Block.
Right. Well, let's mention here the fact that... that Chelsea on Wednesday, I think, will play their 66th game of the season. For Spurs, it'll only be their 52nd. So, you know, maybe a slight element of freshness on in Tottenham's favour there. But you don't see this historical trend reversing?
If Gareth Bale can do something, maybe. But Spurs were fairly average on Saturday against Southampton. They were quite lucky to win the game. And, you know, it's Gareth Bale. you've just got to... It doesn't really matter what you do against the rest of the 10 players that Spurs have, because Bale's just coming up with a brilliant goal every week, basically.
Just kind of them. Hang in there and they'll give you a chance.
Yeah.
The amount of late winners he scored this season is remarkable.
It's not just the late winners as well, it's the quality of them.
Yeah. 8 winning goals, more than any other player in the Premier League this season. Goals that win games. Almost a third of all goals scored by Spurs have come from Gareth Bale. He scored more goals from outside the box than any other player in the top 5 Euro leagues this season. Wow.
I think only Van Persie is responsible for more of his team's points than Bale is this season.
Interesting. Arsenal, by contrast, Spurs only, you know, woke up right at the death. Arsenal did the first 23 seconds and then kind of sat back and admired their handiwork.
They scored after 20 seconds and, you know, it was QPR, so that was it.
That was indeed that. We'll talk more about QPR and what role they might represent in this finale of the season later on, when we discuss their upcoming game against Newcastle, all of a sudden in all sorts of trouble. But, Rob, this being your very much farewell appearance, and us having mentioned Man United, gloves are off. It's time to say what you really think about Old Trafford and legacies and all that sort of thing. Do you leave them in good shape, Rob? What do you think?
It's the weakest United side for about 20 years, but they're still the best
really?
Team. Well, I mean, yeah, actually, no, that's not fair. The team 2 years ago was weaker, but, I mean... It's been a weird season, hasn't it? To win the league so comfortably, and yet they haven't really played that well for most of it.
Mm.
They had some great results.
But they haven't had to. Is it just because they haven't been pushed?
It's a combination of course, Ferguson and Van Persie, really. And then the defence sorted themselves out after Christmas. But I don't think, in time, I don't think anyone will remember it as a memorable season, really. When you break it down, it hasn't been that much to get excited about.
Right.
Beyond Van Persie, of course.
It's interesting being outplayed by Chelsea in more or less each game as well.
They played really well at Stamford Bridge, I thought. But
they looked like Chelsea were going to win it before that red card.
Yeah, maybe, but then United played extremely well in the first half. Yeah. I know what you mean. Well, they've been outplayed by quite a few teams. I still think City are a better team than United, even though United are...
Probably better first 11. United have a bigger squad.
Well, you say the squad, but then look at the squad yesterday. He used the squad and, I don't know. It's hard to judge United, really. They're so dependent on a few players. And they have a lot of players. I mean, if Carrick got injured, and say Carrick had been out for 4 months, they would be nowhere. So, I don't know. It's a difficult team to appraise, really.
Did you see, speaking of Carrick and his potential replacements in the midfield, did you see that incredible stat about Anderson over the
is it
weekend?
The, well,
6 years he's been there, he's only finished 18 games.
Well, there was a great moment in, I think it was the 5-4 League Cup game at Chelsea, and he was waving to the bench after an hour, and the commentator said, I think he's picked up an injury. No, he hasn't. He's just absolutely shattered.
He blocked a goal-bound shot from Cleverley as well yesterday. He's obstacle.
I know, he's... I think in last summer he said, this is going to be my biggest season.
In which sense?
Yeah.
Anyway, well, listen, so now that whole top four, well, other two places in the top four picture, Arsenal, are they sorted now that Chelsea and Spurs will take points off each other? Or do Arsenal have to worry, only being two ahead of Spurs, with Wigan coming up at home and then Newcastle away?
It's not in their hands.
It's not in their hands.
No, if Spurs win then on Wednesday, then...
Absolutely.
Then it's in Spurs and Chelsea's hands.
Wow.
So,
wow. But then only one of those two can take maximum points from the Chelsea-Spurs game. I'm no good at maths, so I don't know if that means that it does then become in Arsenal's
only if
hands.
Tottenham win. If Tottenham win, it's out of Arsenal's hands.
Right.
But otherwise, it remains in there.
Because those are difficult games, aren't they? Wigan at home, you know, there's no legislating for the Latics at present. And Newcastle away, and of course that's a fixture that's seen Arsenal come unstuck before now.
Yeah, Wigan at home kind of becomes a hard game from April onwards, doesn't it? And they won their last season, I think, in April or in May. They played really well at the weekend. You'd still think if Arsenal need the points, you'd still think they would have enough to win that. Newcastle away, you just say, games away at Newcastle are really difficult to call because, you know, whatever, they kind of, if they get momentum, the crowd on their side. As Arsenal know, they were 4-0 up, weren't they, and they didn't win.
Very much so. And, so of course, Newcastle have conceded, what, 9 unanswered goals in their last 2 home appearances. So,
but conversely, of course, yeah, exactly. By then, Newcastle might not need anything, depending on other results. It's incredibly tough. If Sunderland win tonight against Stoke, they jump 6 places.
Well.
Which is amazing at this stage of the season.
Obviously, you're 9th, you still aren't safe.
Yeah. And you normally see that in kind of October, September, not now.
You look at Villa, they could finish in the top half. You know, if it's remarkable considering everything.
If Sunderland and Stoke draw this evening and Wigan win against Swansea on Tuesday, you'd have 4 teams on 38 points with 2 matches left. That would be super, super tight.
Yeah, you worry for Sunderland because I think what they've got, they've obviously had Fletcher out for some time now, Sessegnon out, Wickham's out. And they've got, what, just Danny Graham up front who hasn't scored yet for them.
So. All right. Well, we'll have a bit of a relegation chat later on. But that was a quick look at the Premier League, a division that was completely outclassed in terms of drama this weekend by the Championship. Absolutely extraordinary. And we'll be telling you what it all meant after this. Final day of the Championship, and they were looking for the automatic promotion places to go up with Cardiff. Watford just needed to either win or do better than Hull did. Am I right?
Yeah.
Watford were at home to Leeds at Vicarage Road. Jacob, you were there. Simon, you were what, behind the sofa or something at this point?
I was in the office monitoring proceedings.
Right. Extraordinary drama.
Yeah, it was extraordinary drama. I think... from Watford's point of view, I mean, I don't believe in fate or higher beings, but there comes a time when you just have to say, you know.
Quite a big shout to lay out there. You don't believe in either fate or any kind of higher being.
I don't. It's not really the Guardian Religion podcast.
Right.
But I don't believe in fate, but there comes a point in a day where you just have to say, you know, this isn't going to be.
Right.
And
what point was it for you? Was it when Almunia went out in the warm-up?
No, Almunia going out was not such a blow. Bond has played several times for Watford this season with distinction. I think he's a pretty good reserve keeper. I think a team competing for promotion in the Championship needs to have a good reserve keeper. However, very few teams have a good third-choice keeper. So
right.
When you come to that.
And that was to prove crucial because then Bond got that, what you called a horrific, what was he?
Yeah. Sly and disgraceful.
Right.
That was vile and despicable.
All right. Talk us through the incident.
Well, it was just a crazy day where this guy, Dominic Polian, wouldn't have been on the pitch if very early on Joel Ekstrom hadn't elbowed, I don't know whether it was intentional or not, but he caught Steve Morrison in the face with an elbow when they were challenging for the ball. So this guy came on, Polian, and 10 minutes afterwards, chasing a long ball, and defender Ekechi Anya comes across and he just gives him that stupid push which players do, and he ends up clattering into Bond, knocks him out. There's 12 minute delay, blood on the pitch, and the guy's taken to
they
the
had
hospital.
To wash the pitch after
staff came on with a bottle of water and washed it off, and the guy was taken to hospital with a broken nose and concussion.
So on comes the third choice keeper for Watford,
Jack Bonham, who never played before, 19 years old.
Wow.
Yep. And he didn't cover himself in glory.
No indeed not. What happened then, Simon?
Well, Polian, the culprit in the incident that led to our reserve goalkeeper being injured, went on to score the opening goal for Leeds. An element of good fortune in it, a bit of a defensive catastrophe. And then Watford equalised.
What a goal as well.
With a very fine goal, a nice strike from a good player from just outside the penalty area. Watford's game by this stage was running about 16, 17 minutes later than all the other Championship games because of.
Did you know that when just before the Leeds goal, all the Watford fans started celebrating because they thought Hull had gone behind? And we had the screen on in the press box with the Cardiff game on. It's 0-0. What are they all celebrating? And suddenly, Polian's tapping into an empty net. It was just that kind of day.
Well, there is a. You do wonder to what extent that influenced the team on the pitch when the ground suddenly celebrating and you're thinking about what might be happening elsewhere, and literally within seconds of that there's this defensive calamity and Leeds take the lead. I don't know how this rumour started, but you do wonder whether that influenced the goal that was conceded so soon afterwards.
What about Leeds' winner then? Well, heartbreak.
But a lot happened between then.
A lot happened between then. So
Cardiff scored.
And so Watford at that point only need to draw.
Okay, so meanwhile up in the KC.
Well, Cardiff, it's half time at Vicarage Road, right. And obviously the second half has just started at the KC Stadium. Fraser Campbell puts Cardiff in front. So at this point, Watford are going up because they're drawing, Hull are losing. The Watford fans do realise this, that Cardiff have scored. The second half starts, and then immediately I think Hull score two goals, 2-1 up. So it doesn't really matter now what Watford are doing. The game kind of just falls away. Nothing really happens. Troy Deeney stupidly gets sent off. So you're thinking, right, this is done. Nothing's going to happen now. Watford down to 10 men. They're not going to score. They've got nothing really going for them up front. Leeds are just kind of killing the game. And then suddenly Hull get a penalty.
Right. Well, this is extraordinary. All right, yeah. So now we'll switch our attention to the KC Stadium, where Hull get this last-minute penalty, and brilliantly, all their fans decide to invade the pitch to celebrate.
They thought that was the final whistle.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they thought that was the final whistle. Instead, they had a penalty. And
yeah. I mean, the remarkable thing before that is that Hull have missed several chances, and as Jacob said, Campbell comes on. Campbell, of course, was instrumental in Hull getting promoted the last time they got into the Premier League, and they tried to bring him back on a number of occasions, and he didn't get the best of receptions when he came on, and celebrated quite cheekily. Hull equalised. Go ahead, have the chance to make it 3-1. Prošević, who's been much maligned, quite an expensive signing from the German second division, misses, and then was it Abdoulaye Faye handles in his own box. Nicky Maynard scores the equalising penalty.
And now it's 2-2.
And now 10 minutes left in the Watford game.
And so their game is finished, and all of a sudden they're looking absolutely ashen-faced, no?
No, not Brucey. He was red-faced.
Well, Brucey, yeah. Absolutely extraordinary. So Steve Bruce is looking there like they've just blown it. All those celebrations of the fans on the pitch, etc. But they've still got 10 minutes to go to wait for the Watford game.
Wakes up again at Watford, and they had a couple of... Paddy Kenny made a very good double save, and one Forestieri hit the side netting, and you're thinking, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? Pour so many men for. Zola said, I had to gamble. I thought we were going to do it. I thought there was going to be a goal. There was a goal, but it was at the wrong end.
Yeah, it was at the wrong end. Leeds. Poor Jack Bonham. Was it his fault, or was the back pass just a...
He should have dealt with the shot.
He tips it over his head into his own net.
Yeah, it was a nice chip, but he should have got firmer wrist to it. He should have kept it out of goal. But you've got to give some credit to Hull, I think. I saw their game against Barnsley the previous week, and they were dismal.
Right. So with that goal going in anyway, Hull, who was sitting there watching TVs and listening to the radios, whatever the case, he suddenly go crazy and Jay Simpson does his dance. Did you see the Jay Simpson dance?
Jay Simpson, he's got some self-confidence, shall we say.
Right.
And the camera was... they were watching events at Watford unfold on the television, and the Sky were watching them, watching Sky... And he liked to be near the camera. And in particular moments of significance, he liked to be fairly kind of aggressively displaying himself in front of the camera.
The way Hull and Watford have gone about this, though, in the last few weeks makes it almost think that neither of them actually wanted to go up because the Championship is such a great league. Hull didn't win any of their last four games. They lost to Wolves and they lost to Barnsley, and they drew two home games as well, one of them Bristol City at home, who were already relegated. And Watford, all they had to do was beat Leeds, who had nothing to play for. Compared to the teams that went up last season, it's much weaker.
Yeah, I don't think that anyone at Watford can feel robbed. I mean, the circumstances of the last game were difficult. There was a penalty call early on that probably was a penalty in Watford's favour, and if that had been given and the Leeds player sent off, then things would have been very different. But Watford are third and deserve to be third.
They've conceded they've lost 14 points in the last 15 minutes as well this season.
Yeah. But what was amazing about the Championship this year, obviously people talk about how competitive it was, but in the end, the last promotion place, the last playoff place, and the last relegation place were not just decided on the 46th game of the season, but they were decided by goals scored in the 89th minute or after.
Wow.
On the 46th game of the season. It was quite a thing.
Absolutely extraordinary. So now you've got the playoffs, and Watford going into their game with who? Leicester?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Will Bond or will Almunia be back, or are you going to be in with Bonham again?
Almunia has a slight hamstring strain, we'll see. Bond broke his nose, but these days you can play with a face mask.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff. And apparently Watford have asked for permission for an emergency loan signing. So we'll see.
Really? Just for the playoffs?
So either of our first two goalkeepers or someone else entirely might play.
All right. So anyway, Hull get their promotion. They come straight back up. And how well they'll do is a subject perhaps for another day. Cardiff also up, and you've got Leicester and Watford and Crystal Palace against their arch rivals Brighton, Eagles and Seagulls. This after Crystal Palace, with a late goal in their game, sent Posh down along with Wolves.
What's really interesting is looking at the splitting the Championship season into two. The first half of the season, bottom eight teams in the first half of the season, six of them were in the top nine for the second half. And Barnsley not far behind them. So you had all these teams that basically defined their season in the opening half as struggling, suddenly performing really well. And as a result, teams like Barnsley and Peterborough, who had played excellently for a long period of time, for effectively 6 months of the season, were still fighting relegation on the last day, where normally they could expect to be very well clear.
Well, I think that was the thing. There was only 18 points between Peterborough and Palace, between relegation and playoffs, which is not a massive amount. It's
less than there is between first and second in the Bundesliga this season, for example.
Yeah.
Remarkable. So anyway, now that you've got Crystal Palace taking on Brighton, obligatory reference to their extraordinary arch rivalry that no one can quite explain. Simon, you wrote an article on this. I did hear somebody suggesting that this goes back to the 60s and bank holiday Mods v Rockers clashes on Brighton's seafront.
But
you've got a rather more pedestrian explanation.
My research suggested it was basically down to when Terry Venables was in charge at Crystal Palace and Alan Mullery was in charge at Brighton. And they had a personal rivalry which began when they were both at Tottenham Hotspur, and Mullery was named as captain when Venables wanted to be. And it basically started then.
Right. Wow. Extraordinary. And as a result, anyway, draconian restrictions on the fans for these playoff games.
Ridiculous. What would be the most unlikely rivalry in football? I know Gillingham and Swindon hate each other, which seems a bit weird.
No.
That sounds like one of the the restrictions on the fans, though.
Me and Sid Lowe. Yeah.
Again, just football fans treated like muck. The having, you know, bring your ID or you're not getting to the game, can't give a ticket or you're banned for a year. Can't give you a ticket to someone else, you're banned for a year from going to football.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither club has a particularly bad disciplinary record as regards fans of late. Brighton certainly don't, do they?
No. No. I mean, it is a fierce rivalry.
It's unlike the FA to get something so badly wrong.
Well, it's the police, isn't it?
Is it the police?
Yeah.
It's unlike the police to get something so badly wrong. Oh, well. In other head-scratching news from the Championship, how about Billy Davis, before that Leicester game, having his post-game press conference before that Leicester game?
Yeah, another bewildering decision. I don't know what the local journalist had done to annoy him.
Well, he said that it was because he was very busy after the game.
Yeah, he said he had bigger fish to fry post-match.
With the supporters, and let's have a look. I have to go into the boardroom to see the chairman and the people that have travelled far and wide to come to the game. This is one day when the fans come first. My priorities are elsewhere today. I have to show in my opinion. So he said, so with the greatest respect to you guys, I'm going to do my post-game press conference before the game. Amazing.
I don't think even Mourinho has pulled that stunt. Yeah, I mean, he's often someone who often sends his assistant in or doesn't do pre-match press conferences or whatever. But yeah, maybe he can learn from Billy.
Had he been preparing for an irrelevant mid-table fixture, it would have been one thing. But they were playing Leicester in a game of enormous significance in the playoff shake-up. And over the course of Saturday, Forest were in the playoffs for a period, and Leicester obviously ended up there. And so to have a post-match press conference pre-match, when all you're saying is, we're going to spend a few weeks over the summer thinking about next season and we'll bring in some new players, would be one thing. But when someone's saying, well, if you're in the playoffs, how will you feel? And if you've just missed out on the playoffs, how will you be feeling then? Beyond fast.
Right? It is beyond fast. Here's his comment. Knowing what I have to do before the game, I didn't want to ignore you, the press, or disrespect you in any way. So what I have done is give you the utmost respect in giving you a press conference before the game. To which one of the journalists replies, I shouldn't think any of us have ever done a press conference about a football match or on a football match day before the game, Billy. Whether that amounts to full respect, I'm not convinced. To which he replies, well, there's always a first. Which is certainly true.
got one other random statistic, which since I compiled it, I might as well tell it to you.
Yeah.
So Peterborough United, who went down in the end on Saturday, despite, I mean, they lost their first eight games of the season, but since then have been pretty competitive. But just looking at their results, they seem to be the opposite of flat-track bullies. They seem to be much better the teams they play. So looking at their home games, against the rest of the bottom three, they lost both. Against the rest of the bottom half, they lost nearly 64%. Against the top half, they lost 25%. Against the top six, 16%. And against the top three, they didn't lose at all. But the better their opponents, the better they are.
Remarkable.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's bad news for them because they're going to face League One teams. They're doing really badly now.
Yeah.
In League One, you've got the playoffs, second legs of which are Monday evenings. We can't say too much about these.
Brentford, though, they got a last-minute penalty again week after, and this time the guy who should have taken it last week took it and scored.
Redemption.
Yeah.
Redemption. So that's against Swindon, yeah, and it's 1-1.
Yeah, it's tonight.
Yeah, the second leg. Yeovil are against Sheffield United, have a 1-0 lead from their first leg. Blah, 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 blah. And Bradford. How about Bradford, eh? They're going to be playing Northampton at Wembley in the League Two playoff final. Good for them.
And Newport County are back in the Football League.
Dan says, any chance of a mention for Newport County? Bingo.
Yeah, they beat Wrexham 2-0 at Wembley in the conference playoff final.
Right.
Two late goals in the last 4 minutes. And
Justin
was been out of it for 25 years or something, wasn't it? And they had this chairman who won the lottery and bought the club.
Yeah, won Euro Millions.
Yeah.
How much did he win?
He won about £41 million.
Wow. And, okay, so that's in the kind of ballpark that you would need to actually put a proper promotion-winning team together.
I don't think he's blown £41 million on it. I think he has just gently nudged them upwards.
Right. Cool.
There was a good interview with him.
Stuart James, yeah.
Still available online. And Justin Edinburgh is managing there. And not a player I particularly picked out as top manager material when he was performing for Tottenham. But there he is. And actually, it was quite interesting talking after the match about how he'd experienced top-flight football. But when he was at the top of the game, he kind of fell out of love with football and felt a lack of connection with fans and people and the heart of the game, which he rediscovered in non-league.
It's a good year for Welsh football as well.
Oh, Jacob, not that joke again.
Yeah.
Nope.
No.
What,
as someone's saying this morning, we're all going to have to, after everyone's raving about German football, we're going to have to start copying
Welsh football.
Yeah.
It's a good shout, actually. Good shout. Right, okay. A little bit of a musical interlude, and then European action.
Hello, James. You come crawling back?
Yes, Sid. come, Sydney. We were just joking the other day.
beg, Jimbo, beg.
Please, Sid, would you tell us about sundry Spanish stories, including Barcelona back on track for the title, etc., but not actually winning it. Messi, after months on the bench, coming on to do his business. Mighty Messi, here he comes to save the day and all that. Terrific goal. And
two, indeed.
And also that Pepe Mu business.
Yeah, Pepe Mu. Where would you like me to start?
Start with a Pepe Mu.
Let's start with Pepe Mu then. It's that et tu Pepe moment.
Right. Well, Mu, first of all, on Friday, came out with some extraordinary remarks.
Yeah, Mu on Friday was in, I don't know whether to call it fantastic form or not. I suppose from a journalist's point of view, it sort of was. He did a press conference in which he said that no decision had been made yet on his future. But it felt like the press conference of a man that was kind of saying goodbye, but with a bit of a parting shot. Although someone told me the other day that the actual phrase isn't parting shot, it's Parthian shot. Did you know? But anyway, there you go. That's a bit of semantics for you. Anyway, and he basically pointed the finger very, very clearly at the media in Spain and at Iker Casillas. And one of the things he said was that he talked about how there's no problem with players in the dressing room who want to be treated equally, but when there's someone who thinks he's bigger than everyone else, there is. Now, if that was a little bit oblique, that reference, he then later on was asked if he made any mistakes at all in 3 years, if he changed anything in 3 years. You know, he could have changed poking Tito Villanova in the eye, for example. And he said, oh, well, at the end of the first year, I asked for Diego Lopez, who, of course, now is a goalkeeper who's taken over from Casillas, and I didn't force it through enough. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't believe for a minute that he wanted Diego Lopez at the end of the first year. I think he probably did want another goalkeeper, but I don't believe for a minute that it was Diego Lopez. And that was a real kick in the teeth for Casillas. At the end of the game this weekend, Pepe, who has always been assumed to be about the most loyal Mourinhoista there is, came out and said Mourinho's words were not the most appropriate, and he should have more respect.
All right. Estella in the background there. What's going on there?
I think someone's just rung the doorbell.
Oh, right, OK. Crikey, who could it be? Sid, well, that's interesting. So the whole thing beginning to collapse. So some people wondering whether... there's been the suggestion that something happened on the summer tour to the United States that sparked Rail's bad start to the season and is basically going to come tumbling out in this what's increasingly a bitter end to the season for them.
I must confess, I don't know what happened in the United States. Although, of course, there was that some of the tensions that have been building with the squad for a long time were clearly evident there. One of Mourinho's big problems with Casillas was what Mourinho sees as Casillas' dalliance with Barcelona players. Now, of course, his dalliance with Barcelona players is inevitable because he's a Spain captain. But I think Mourinho believes that Casillas overstepped the mark even. Casillas clearly, and I think with probably some justification, thinks that Mourinho tried to create more tension than was really necessary between the two clubs. There's also, I think, a sense that Mourinho feels that Casillas is not a great trainer, which is probably true, but I suppose he's a goalkeeper. Maybe he hasn't felt the need to be a great trainer in the past. Yeah. One of the things the media here have overlooked is that Casillas actually didn't start the season very well. I think that's a reality. Right. And Diego Lopez has played really well since. But yeah, it really does look like the wheels are falling off. I also wonder if this is partly deliberate from Mourinho now. If Mourinho knows he's going, it probably suits him to try and put Madrid in such a position where they go, oh, just go, will you? And that they don't ask for that money.
Well, the press beginning to even ask now whether they need to keep him around till the end of the season.
Well, bear in mind that there's only really one game, which is the Copa del Rey final against Atletico Madrid. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that Real Madrid definitely don't need a manager, but if the tension is worse with Mourinho, then they sort of don't for that game. Mm. Now, the problem is, of course, the Mourinho's contractual situation needs to be resolved, and that in theory at least, involves Real Madrid paying him off to go now, or him buying himself out to go now. And I think basically we're in that kind of sack me, no, you sack me, no, you walk away, no, you resign, no, you sack me, no, you resign situation, which happens quite often when there's a huge, great payoff in the middle of it.
Absolutely. All right, all sorts of drama at the bottom. Deportivo back in the bottom three, I believe. Should also mention, well, we touched on Messi and his terrific goals, but they were terrific. And was the Betis goalkeeper not trying to do him a bit of damage after the second?
Yeah, it did sort of look like Messi looked up at him as if to say, what are you up to? I'm not convinced it was deliberate at all. But it sort of did look a little bit sneaky, didn't it?
Mm. And at the bottom then, how dramatic is the situation?
Well, at the bottom it's getting... you look at the bottom and you go from 15th place Granada 35, Zaragoza 33, Osasuna 33, Depor 30, Celta 31, Mallorca 29. But what's really dramatic about all of this is that, you know, that traditional story that appears every year at this stage of the year in Spain of matches being bought and people being given 30 third-party incentives to try a little bit hard, even not to try at all, has really come to the surface properly this time. And I'm quite optimistic that something might actually happen because every year these stories emerge and no one seems to give a flying monkeys, to be honest.
The little suitcases.
The little suitcases, yeah, the little suitcases. Or someone corrected me the other day and said, well, surely if they're little suitcases, they're briefcases. I thought, yeah, I suppose they are. So, which is annoying because I've always thought of them as little suitcases. And the story basically focuses on the Levante game against Deportivo, which Levante lost 4-0. And this is back at the middle of April, April the 13th, I think. And at halftime, Baquero, who's one of the Levante players, confronted some of his teammates and accused them of not trying. And as the tension grew in the conversation, and the conversation really became an argument, accused them of selling themselves. This story emerges last week, and rather than denying it, Barquero comes out and says, I'm sorry for accusing them. I accuse them based on something that's false. It's not true. Don't worry about it. So no one says this conversation didn't happen. Now, in the meantime, of course, that would just go away, like these stories always go away, and no one ever really seems to investigate. But we've got a new president of the league now, Javier Tebas, who was the vice president before and did nothing when he was vice president, but seems to be wanting to really act now. And he's presented a formal complaint to the anti-corruption prosecutor or attorney or whatever you call it. And it seems there might actually be evidence this time. So I'm hopeful that something that's really widespread in Spain but never really gets picked up on and never really gets attacked might actually get attacked this time, and people might be in trouble. And I must say the response from Deportivo sums it up for me and sums up the attitude in Spain. Because rather than complaining about the accusations, they basically complained that they weren't accusing other teams of other games as well. Mm. In other words, well, they're all doing it.
Mm. And so is this...
I think is the height of pathetic tossiness, but there you go.
Sorry, you say the anti-corruption prosecutor, is this now, would this become then a police matter?
A criminal case now.
Wow.
Yeah, this could now become a criminal case. Now obviously the question mark is the evidence strong enough and would it stick? When there's been recordings before in various cases, I mean, not necessarily, not just football ones, and not necessarily football ones, but Hercules have been involved in one, and Raul Sociedad and Tenerife. Those recordings have normally not been admitted by the judge. So I just wonder if this is now going into a criminal case, whether it's not just that there are recordings, but that whether these recordings were given a warrant in advance because of initial suspicions. And if so, then yes, stuff could really happen this time.
Right, or they could just burn the evidence.
It'd be great news for Spanish football, by the way. I mean, I know it sounds like it's terrible news, but it'd be great news because this is something that everybody knows, and I put knows in speech marks maybe, assumes and accepts as just part of life in the end of the season. And I think if actually some action is taken, if actually some people get in trouble, this could be the beginning of finally eradicating this.
Tell you what, glad that kind of thing doesn't happen in Italy. James Allcross. And then before anyone smirks and thinks I'm being ironic, actually really doesn't. Look at this weekend when you had Catania with nothing to play for, Siena with everything to play for. And in the old days, there would have been a little bit of kind of talking with a hand over your mouth type thing, biscotto. And no, Catania 3-0 win.
Bergessio hat-trick. It's a weekend of goal-scoring feats.
Let's talk about goal-scoring feats in Italy. Miroslav Klose.
He scored 5 in one game and then was... taken off when he could have got the record, which is 6.
That's mental.
Which is held by Piola, who used to play for Lazio, of course, and Omar Sivori. I think it hasn't been done that often. Last time was 27 years ago. It's curious that Totti is chasing this sort of to be the all-time top scorer in Serie A. I think he's only 45, 46 away from doing it. And Piola, who is a former Lazio player, holds that record. And then you have Klose, score 5. The last person to do that is a former Roma player. So you have this sort of dualism in goal scoring feats between there.
A weird symmetry. But extraordinary stuff from Klose, and Lazio absolutely destroying Bologna 6-0. Also on the goal scoring front, you had Di Natale with 2, taking him to 20 for the fourth season in a row. Brilliant. Cavani with a hat trick against Inter, who is spiralling into utter disaster, are they not?
Yeah, although I think Stramaccioni made a good point at the end of the game. He said, look, if we had Milito, if we had Cassano and Palacio, and they were all fit, and Napoli didn't have Cavani, Pandev, and Insigne, and we played that time, the outcome would probably be very different. It would probably be in our favour.
It's in his interest to say that, of course. A lot of people pointed the finger at him and the way he's run this end of season, particularly the game against Napoli yesterday, which left them down in 8th place. A long way. I think 5 points off the Europa League positions, 12 off the top 3, so that's all a bit disastrous. Juve, should mention the fact that they won a very drab game at home to Palermo. They have now won the title for the 29th time officially, although they maintain that it is actually 31. So that was all very exciting.
Yeah. Did you see Conte get thrown into the ice bath?
I didn't actually see it.
Tighty whities.
Right. Really?
Yeah. I think that was the most... because it happened on May 5th.
Right.
Which is a bit of a historic day for Juve and for Conte. They won the title on the final day in 2002, overtaking Inter, having been 5 points behind them with 6 games to go.
That was the famous time when Inter went down to Lazio and blew it, basically, and Ronaldo left the field in tears and then headed off to Real Madrid, etc.
Yeah, and Lazio and Inter were twins, and that was at the Olimpico, and basically the Lazio fans said, let's let this be a home game for you, so they let the Inter fans into the Curva Nord.
Because they wanted Juve to lose, basically.
They wanted Juve to lose, and Inter choked big time. Juve led the championship from the first day to the last day, although they didn't go unbeaten like they did last year, only losing 4 games, I think they've got 3 games still to play, and they're
potentially could get within a point of last year's total.
Well, they're a point behind last year's total now, so they've got 3 games to improve upon that.
Nice anyway to see Nicholas Bentner getting his victory cigar out post game. So well done to him. In other Euro news, Paris Saint-Germain still haven't wrapped up Ligue 1 because they only drew 1-1 with Valenciennes, although they're going to win that. But they got their 9th red card of the season. Naughty Thiago Silva, one of football's bad boys, placing his hands lightly on the referee's chest. The referee, he just went, hold on a second there, ref. The referee went, and pulled out. He was so horrified that he couldn't even find his cards. It was a magnificent scene. Anyway, so they'll have loads of players out next time. They'll have Beckham out, Sirigu out, Verratti out, Thiago Silva out, and they're away to Lyon. So that's quite interesting. Paul Doyle mentioning that Monaco, did we mention last week? I think we did. The tax business in France, Monaco bidding to come up to Ligue 1, but the rest of the Ligue 1's clubs saying that it's not fair because they don't pay taxes and they should have to pay taxes if they want to take part. And apparently they've been asked to pay €200 million to be allowed into Ligue 1. €200 million. It's a lot of lottery winnings, that. In other Euro news, hey, Portugal, Porto are now just 1 point behind Benfica. Although Benfica have a game in hand, those two clashing with each other on the 12th. And the very exciting news about the Portuguese Superliga is that the team in third place are, Rob? Have you got an app for this, Simon Burton? Team in third place in the Superliga? It's Paços Ferreira, who are set to be the smallest team ever to compete in the Champions League. They average crowds of 1,700. Wow. The capacity of the stadium is only, before you ask, 5,172. Absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, I seem to remember them playing Benfica as soon as the lights went out of their ground, I think.
But, right.
They'll have to obviously get that up to speed before they...
I imagine that UEFA will have all sorts of...
licensing.
They'll have to go and play somewhere else. Well, that'll be a shame, won't it? You'd want to see European football coming to whatever their stadium's called, as opposed to them having to move to big stadium up the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, good. But anyway, moving along, Galatasaray sealed their 19th league title with two games to spare. In Sweden, Helsingborg have just gone a point clear of Malmo after their victory over Sirianska. Only 23 more games to go in the Swedish championship, so we'll keep an eye on that. Ajax winning their third consecutive title, the 36th of their career. One other thing to mention on the Euro front, as you all know, Bayern are facing Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League final. Of course, they also met this weekend in Germany, which some people thought would be a fairly low-key affair. Basically, the title's already won, keeping their powder dry for the final, but far from it, because they went at hammer and tongs. Bayern, who I think had only picked up indeed 8 yellow cards all season, had 5 players booked in this one, and Rafinha sent off. And then Klopp and Heinkes wouldn't shake each other's hand at the end. It was, it might be like that on the final. That'd be quite nice, a nice feisty final.
I think there was a spat between him and Klopp and Sammer on the sidelines.
There was
an anti-Mario Götze a banner telling him where to go in the stands.
Rouse. I think they used the word Rouse. Götze Rouse. Good. You looking forward to the final, Rob?
Damn straight. It's going to be brilliant.
Well, who's going to win?
I fear Bayern, but I really hope Dortmund win. Most people, rather.
Yeah. Right-thinking people want Dortmund to win. They kind of do, don't they?
I think there's near unanimity on that.
Yeah?
I don't really mind if Bayern win if they have to.
No. It's the last hurrah of this Dortmund squad, isn't it? Although they probably say that every year. Anyway, that's it for our special Euro roundup. Part 3 awaits with more from the Premier League. The confusion abounds here. Some people think it's part 4.
Is it part 3? Is it part 2 of part 3?
Aren't we into next week's pod now? Davis style.
I think it's all over.
There's Merseyside Derby. Can't believe we haven't talked about that yet.
Rob, what did you think of that one yesterday?
I just thought it was a feast of football, yeah. Mm. That's one of the worst games I've ever seen.
Really?
No, but it was really terrible. It reminded me of a game, George Graham's Leeds at home to Blackburn on a Monday night, a 0-0 draw live on Sky when I don't think it was a shot on goal. At least they had 4 yesterday.
Right.
Everton deserved their win overall, probably.
Did they?
Well, they had a goal disallowed.
It was disallowed? What for?
Sorry, why are you asking?
This is an elaborate joke.
Yeah.
That isn't that funny.
It's got a laugh.
You can't leave us hanging.
They won in my mind. It was a good goal. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. This stand basically goes over Jamie Carragher, but you see that all the time.
It was for an inch beam. What the fouls?
For blocking Rayner.
Existing. Well, the managers didn't seem to know afterwards. One was saying, Anishbi definitely doesn't foul the keeper. And the other one was saying, I thought Diston pushed. No one knew what the foul was for. And that's because there was no foul.
Right.
That's why they didn't know.
All right. Well, you'd feel aggrieved if you were David Moyes and quite possibly your last trip as Everton manager to Anfield and still not getting a win there. Leighton Baines, following the weekend's action, is now the only outfield player in the Premier League to play every single minute of every single game. It's an interesting stat, that, isn't it?
The anti-Anderson.
The anti-Anderson, yeah. Indeed. Fulham Reading, now you show up, Royals. Now.
Nigel Adkins got a win at last.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. Well done for Nigel. And, oh yes, the battle at the bottom. Right, well, this is ever so exciting now. We touched on this back in part, well, it might have been 1-2. We're not entirely sure. Wigan's win at West Brom has really shaken things up, eh?
Yeah, it's no longer in... I think, yeah, Wigan, they have these three games left and they're playing tomorrow night against Swansea at home.
Right, Swansea at home.
Little to play for, so...
Little suitcases.
Yeah, yeah, and
but
you know,
they're a Welsh team.
If they can't win that one, then you know they probably do deserve to go down because right. They're in good form. But suddenly, Wigan and Swansea are kind of packed up for the end of the season, and then they've got Arsenal away and Villa at home on the last day of the season. So they're still they're difficult games. The last two. But.
Well, that game against Villa, we all thought, well, that could be the decider. Looks like Villa now with their victory away at Norwich. Could be out of the danger zone and putting Norwich back into it. Rob, you're grimacing. No, or perhaps it's a Louise-esque smile.
Well, Villa's next game is Chelsea at home. So right. There's a hell of a lot of games involving the three Champions League teams and the relegation team. So it's all happening.
Norwich
are in. I think Norwich are in trouble.
Norwich
are
in trouble. They had just this little 10-game run in you know November, December, which has kept them out of it. And around then, that period, they've been absolutely appalling.
Well, it's interesting. When Norwich drew at Villa earlier in the season, they looked so much better than Villa. Villa were terrible. And yet, a few months on now, sounds like Villa deserve to win on Saturday.
A Wigan's win at West Brom coming at significant cost with Bosajor injuring his hamstring. So he's
the biggest provider of goals and of assists this season.
So is that going to see the whole kind of magic comeback evaporate, do you think?
Well, Figueroa is out for the season as well, isn't he?
Right. And Alcaraz, I believe, was out as well, or has he come back now?
Well, he got injured in the West Ham game a couple of weeks ago, which they lost, but I don't think it was too serious. But, you know, they've still got good players. You know, Maloney's in great form.
Mm. Callum McManaman.
Yeah, Callum McManaman, you know, controversial character who's... could end up, you know, being kind of high as well. His goals maybe send Newcastle down.
Yeah, Newcastle, their draw away at West Ham. Again, there was a goal, controversially not given, but the ball never really crossed the line.
I think that the consensus was that the man with the best view of it made the decision, and so we've got to let him have it.
He fell over.
He fell over post-decision. Anyway,
falling over actually helped the decision.
Because he got closer to the line.
Well, he went like that.
Yeah.
Watching that replay, it did make me think linesmen, they do have a terrifically difficult job, not least because they have to run sideways.
Yeah.
It's weird how people talk about the standard refereeing is probably worse or maybe equal to 20 years ago, but the standard of assistant refereeing has gone up so much. If you fiddle on YouTube, look up Nicola Bertie against England, and there are so many of these decisions. I don't think assistant referees get the credit they deserve, actually.
Right. Interesting.
They've improved a lot.
Interesting. Newcastle, their next game takes them away to...
This is their get-out-of-jail card, basically.
Yeah.
QPR away. But apparently they were very poor on Saturday at Upton Park, again against the West Ham team, who, by all accounts, were just enjoying the sunshine. Mm. And Newcastle were playing as if they had nothing to play for.
Well, they've only had one win on the road all season. They could indeed be in the bottom three by then, depending on what happens with Wigan against Swansea. And they've only scored one goal in four
and
the Sunderland game this evening, of course. Crikey. Well, there's all sorts of drama there at the bottom, Rob.
Well, no, I was going to say, but normally at this stage of the season, you get a kind of a possible freebie, like a team like West Ham, who've got nothing to play. But most of these games involve either two teams relegation or, as you said, a Champions League team. So there are very few freebies. I've got no idea what's going to happen. That's my level of expertise.
Does anyone have an idea what's going to happen?
I don't know, but Norwich, if they are in trouble on the last day, they have City away.
I think Norwich or Wigan.
And Newcastle have Arsenal.
I mean, even Southampton.
And Sunderland have Spurs away.
Let's keep throwing them out.
You've got Stoke, who aren't technically safe. They play Spurs and they play Sunderland. And I think they play Southampton.
Yeah, I mean, Southampton still aren't out of it as well, even though they've had so many great results this season.
This is the most exciting relegation battle, I would say, since...
2005?
Well, I would say 93, 94 even.
What about the one when Fulham stayed up on the final day with the...
This involves about 18.
Oh, I see, yeah, from that point of view.
There was one in 93-4, that mad game when Everton came from 2-0 down.
Oh, yeah.
And I think four different teams were going down on that day before eventually it was Sheffield United. I'd say this is the best of them, maybe.
All right. It'd be nice if four teams went down, wouldn't it?
Particularly for the team that finished third in the Champions
League. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Brilliant. Well, It's been quite a journey that we've made together, and I think we've all learnt plenty. We'll be back on Thursday. In the meantime, many thanks, Simon.
Yeah.
Good luck with those playoffs in an entirely sporting May the best team win sense.
Thank you very much.
Rob, it's not really goodbyes. It's more of an arrivederci. Isn't it, though, really?
You've used that line before, haven't you?
And I'm sure I'll use it again. Rob. James Horncastle, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
And you too, Jacob Steinberg.
Thank you.
Terrific stuff. Have a super couple of days. We'll be back on Thursday.